Welcome to Tips from the Server Room. This podcast is designed for all you systems admins, network specialists, or the guys and gals out there in the office who handles it all. Sit back, relax, grab a beverage, and enjoy Tips from the Server Room. Welcome back, my friends, once again to Tips from the Server Room. This is episode number 70 for November the 11th, 2014. I'm your host, Jack, and I'm going to help guide you through all this magical world of networks, servers, fiber optics, switches, and all things connected. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast. If it's tech, it's here. Check out all the great tech shows at techpodcast.com. Also, as I told you last week, it's been a huge success. This show is now also on Stitcher. You can find us at Stitcher.com, and they have actually picked up this show, as well as many other shows you can find there. You can download the app on your smartphone today, either the iOS, the Apple phones, the iPhones, or the Android phones. They also have an app for that, and that is at Stitcher.com. So two great places you can pick up this podcast. Folks, if you want to watch the video edition of this podcast, I go to great lengths and it's a lot more work, and I told my wife that. It's a lot more work to produce a video than it is to audio. This podcast for a long time has been pure audio, but I found a lot of you out there that like to watch me actually create the podcast, watch me sit here and talk to you. It feels more interactive, I guess. You know, you can see what's going on. The studio is not huge by any means. But, you know, you get to see firsthand, and if I have any screenshots, I throw those in there during the show. So it's just a nice way to kind of interact with you. If you want to see the video, check those out on YouTube, and that's at 42 Technoman. The number 4, the number 2, Technoman. I told you for a few weeks or a few months that we were talking about that live course that we were going to do. Well, I have to report to you tonight that the live course is going well, very well. We have a lot of students in there, and we already are already up to our third session coming up. So, as again, it's a six-week course. It's 2 hours each Wednesday night. So right now, the live course is actually going, and the people seem to be enjoying it, so we're doing a good job there. I will be having another one of these live courses beginning in January of 2015. So if you're interested and you say, well, you know, it's going good so far, so in January 2015, if you'd like to join me for that, please email me if you're interested so I can start that class list. We keep it at a maximum of 15. We don't want any more than 15 people in a course or in a live session because I can't interact with everybody well enough. You know, you always hear that smaller class sizes are usually better for learning, and that's what I try to promote here. If you're interested, email me at jackstechcorner@gmail.com. Please check out the website for this show, and that is at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. That's tipsfromtheserverroom.com, where you can comment on these shows, and I wish that you would. You can also leave me a voice message. Use our Google hotline, our Google voice line, at 724-701-0550. Once again, that's 724-701-0550. If you have any questions or ideas for future shows, I would love to hear those, folks, because you people out there keep bringing the questions and you bring suggestions for shows, and that's what makes these shows more interesting. Then I dig around, I find the information if I don't know it, and, there's subjects with servers that I don't know. I mean, that happens, you know. Not so much with the server because, I mean, I teach that, but maybe if it's a networking or fiber question, I may have to find out, but I will get the answer for you. You can email me those questions at jackstechcorner@gmail.com. Also, follow me on Twitter, and on Twitter, I'm at Technoman. I first wanted to start this show off by telling you that I made a purchase this week. I've been looking at buying this thing for a while, and I said, I don't know. The reason I bought it, if you guys listen to a show called Windows Weekly, there's a gentleman on there by the name of Paul Thurrott. Now, Paul writes a lot of books about Windows, and he is in that Microsoft camp. I mean, he doesn't work for Microsoft, but he writes a lot of stuff. You'll find his books just about anywhere. But he was talking about Toshiba coming out with a new tablet. what kind of intrigued me a little bit. I thought, well, Toshiba, which, okay, I have to admit, I'm not a fan of Toshiba laptops. I find them to be, at times, at least the ones I've used, to be very springy. The keyboards are not, like, solid, very responsive. The cases are a little, let's say, less than up to par what I like to work with. So anyway, but Toshiba came out with a tablet. It's called the Encore Mini. And the Encore Mini right now, when I first was going to buy it, it was $130. Now, people said, well, during the closer to the holidays, these are going to, price is going to drop. So I actually purchased this thing. It's a 7-inch tablet. You know, it's not the greatest processor. It's not the, and I will be doing some talk about this on the show as I get this thing in. But anyway, I bought the thing for $109. $109. Now, if you want the Bluetooth keyboard that can go with it, they're charging $55. I recommend go to Amazon, look for a case with a keyboard. You will find those because I've already been searching just to check around. But the thing cool about this thing is it comes with a full Windows 8 professional on it, not RT, not that stripped down thing. It's full Windows 8 Pro, and it also comes with Office 365. Now, you know, most of you know that watch this show that I'm not the biggest Office fanatic in the world. I think you can type a memo or a note or type a document in just about anything under the sun. I like LibreOffice because it's free. It's an open source type project, and I've been using it for quite some time. But, you know, I thought, you can't buy Office 365 for a year for $109, and you're getting it for free for 1 year. So I think what Microsoft is doing, first of all, they're telling these companies, hey, anything under a 9-inch tablet or anything under a 9-inch screen, you can load Microsoft Windows Professional for free. So that's the first thing. They didn't have to pay for any licensing fee for Microsoft. And then Microsoft is saying, wait, let's put the Office 365 on, because if we get people hooked back on Microsoft Office, then they'll have to use our product and they'll continue to pay us for years to come. And I don't know if that's to be the case, but I just thought it was pretty intriguing for me to buy the thing. I wanted to buy it for a very small device to remotely control my servers, maybe keep up on my wireless units. It's just a small tablet with Windows. This leads me to the second part of this conversation. Folks, if you're a developer, if you've developed anything with iOS, or if you're a programmer with Visual Studio, and my flavor of Visual Studio is Visual Basic, which people will say, you're not a real programmer because you don't program in C, C++, and all that. But I find it to be a language that I've learned years ago, and I can pick it back up. Well, I picked it back up, and I started writing for this tablet. I started writing some code. So if you're interested in any future code projects, email me and say, hey, Jack, I'm a programmer. Or even if you're not a certified programmer, even if you're a program hacker, like, you know, you just want to hack around code, you kind of like the way it kind of works, let me know, because I have some ideas for some different types of software. And, you know, we will definitely cut you in. If there's some billions of dollars to be made, you will become part of the company. So I'm just saying to play around anywhere right now. So if you're interested in that, let me know. I'm also working on a couple software tools. You know, we give a free tool of the week. Maybe we can program some tools for these tablets, some kind of scaled down versions of the tools that we can use with our networks and stuff to make them even more usable. Folks, $109. I told my wife I have to try it. So hopefully it'll be here soon and we can start playing with that thing and let you know a little bit more about it. Well, that took up about 9 minutes of the show, so let's keep on moving on here. First, we want to do our Tool of the Week. I got to do a little song for like boom, 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 like a Tool of the Week song. Anyway, the Tool of the Week this week that I found for you folks is called NetResView. NetResView. You don't have to write that down. There'll be a link in the show notes for you so you can see what NetResView is. But what it does, it's a small utility that displays a list of all your network resources, computers, disk shares, and printer shares on your LAN. This is opposed to the My Network Places module of Windows. NetView will display all network resources from all domains and workgroups in one screen, and including admin and hidden shares. That's pretty scary because we do hide some shares on our network, and this little utility will show you those shares. It also gives you in here the workgroup or domain they're on, the resource type, the resource name, and the IP address of the resource. Folks, I use IP scanners all the time. I don't know if you do, but you know, occasionally you want to scan your network to see what it picks up, to see if there's any, especially if there's any rogue access points out there. That's huge these days. An office worker walks into your office and plugs their own Linksys wireless router in because they don't want to use your passcode or anything. And they're savvy enough to plug it in your network. Your network hands in an IP, and all of a sudden you have this rogue wireless unit on air. I just wanted to share with you just a few, and I'll have a link, like I said, in the show notes for this. But there is some advanced options. It says in the advanced option windows under the options menu, you can configure these things in NetRes View. And some of it is, let's see. If you only need to view a list of computers on your network, you can set it for that. If NetView fails to retrieve some of the IP addresses or network shares, it says try to increase the timeout values. That's when, how long the software takes to ping the network device, right? How long it takes it to send a ping back from the network device and talk to it. If you're loading processes, if the loading process is too slow, you try to decrease the timeout values. Again, that's another way of doing that. If you want to view the MAC addresses of each computer in your network, then you would select Retrieve MAC Address option. Folks, this thing is loaded for a free little piece of software. I mean, it's pretty cool. And it's from a company called NIRSoft, N-I-R-Soft, N-I-R-Soft. So that is my tool for you of the week. Once again, the link will be in the show notes. So go over to tipsfromtheserverroom.com. And you can catch us, catch up on that software. Download it. Try it out. See what you think. Tonight, we're going to push it to the limit. I remember that song a long time ago. Actually, tonight I thought I would dig up some stuff for you. And we're going to talk about backup concepts. We talked about backup a while back in the shows. And we talked about different ways of backing up cloud storage and all this different stuff. I want to talk to you. I want to try to bring it down to some of the grassroots. And I call this a little bit of talk to you about some stories from the trenches, some stuff that I've did for backing up company computers. And I work with some very small clients that have very limited resources. By resources, I mean limited cash. And you don't walk in and say, you need a Barracuda backup server. It's $7,000, and their backup services are $200 a month. That doesn't fly when you're working with a small business or a small client that's just worried about backing up their Quicken files, their QuickBooks, maybe their payroll database, and a few other like little memos and notes that they have. So you have to kind of be a little bit more creative with your backups. The first one we're going to talk about here is a script. Remember I talked to you last week a little bit about scripts, how much you can do with scripts. And the programming I've done, we talked a little bit earlier about me writing this new software that I'm working on. Just a couple ideas in my head that I decided to start putting down to some code. But I talked to a lot of these young folks coming out of school today, and I can't believe that a lot of the technical training schools don't teach very much. They hit on scripting. They tell you like what scripting is, but you don't write them. You know, you have to be able to write the script. Just because you know that I can automate a task by using a script, that's wonderful to tell you that. But wouldn't it be so much better for me to say, look, this is how you write a script. You start it out by echo off because you don't want to see anything on the screen, and then you start writing a script. Or learn to use PowerShell for scripting, right? As you can already tell with the echo off, most of my stuff I write is like a batch file scripting, or I write a lot of VBS scripting, Visual Basic Scripting Language. I've been doing it for years, and it automates so many tasks. But to tell you that scripts automate, well, that's a definition. That's not any big deal. And with the coding I did, the reason I learned to start writing Visual Basic and Visual Studios, I didn't go to school for that. I picked up some, you know, some books, and I suggest to start off with, believe it or not, start off with like something like Visual Studio for Dummies. And those books, don't let them kick you in the backside and say, oh, I'm just dumb, that's why I'm reading. No, it puts it in more plain English, right? So a non-programmer can understand it. You don't want to read an engineering programming book because you're not going to get it. It's just not for your level. Later on, it will be. There'll be stuff in there that will be for your level. But right now, it's not. The reason I started programming was so I can automate tasks for any company I work for. I go in, I look and see what they're doing. And, you know, part of our job is to make the workflow better. And if there's not an application out there for it, I would simply write it. I would write the application to make things better. In doing that, I started writing programs for our job, for work. And we have the tough task every year in our business of entering 100 new users to our Active Directory domain. Now, these 100 users are placed in a database somewhere else. And I knew that they're in this database. And I knew that database had three things that I needed from that particular thing. Now, I know we're getting a little bit off backup, but I'm telling you the importance of learning to do a little programming on your own. What I needed out of there was some form of ID, and that was used for the login, the first name and the last name. That's the three things I needed, and that was housed in that database. And I can export that as a CSV file. I pulled that out, and I wrote a program to, and if you've never tried to use these, it's called DSmod commands. Look those up. We're not talking about that tonight. But it takes all those files, and it builds a batch file of DSmod commands. And it's just DSmod, add user, da-da-da. And I put all the stuff in the way that they want it in that batch file, the way it should be laid out. And we just simply run add users.bat or add user.bat. Boom, it fires off. The 100 users are created with their home folders. Their email addresses are in there. Everything I need's in there for them. And instead of us doing it by hand, 100 users in Active Directory by hand, would take you pretty much a day, you know, or if you're a fast typer, maybe 4 hours, but still it took a lot of work. We get that down to 5 minutes, okay? So you need to learn in this business, we have to be very diversified, I think is the word I'm looking for. So we have to be able to do many, many tasks, not just I could use Active Directory and create organizational units. That's great. But if you want to make yourself more valuable to your company or more valuable to your clients, because when I talk to clients, they're like, Jack, we have this problem and we can't find a piece of software out there. I'll look at the problem. We'll write it out on a piece of paper. We'll engineer it out. And then I just simply come home and I write the code for them. And usually within a week, sometimes a weekend, I have it knocked out and they're ready to go. So it's very, very valuable. Why did I tell you that? Because we're talking a little bit about doing some scripting, because I like to use, for my first backup suggestion for you, is using Xcopy to backup one server to another. Now, if you've never used Xcopy before, I suggest you go take a little peek around, take a look at that, and see what is Xcopy. Xcopy is basically just a command line interface at the command prompt. You can type Xcopy, space, what you want to copy, space, and where do you want it to go? And it will just copy those files over for you. We use this all the time. We write a lot of scripts. We automate the task once it's a batch file or a VBS script. And that auto task runs every night, and it copies the files. And you can do this from one server to another server. Now, here's the catch. And I have a solution for you folks out there working with these small businesses that is fairly well. I'm going to give you two suggestions, okay? The first one is not really what I would advise, but it is a suggestion. It's a good idea, first of all, to have two separate locations. And I'm not talking, we have a server room and then we have a basement of the same building. We're going to copy from there to there. That's not two locations. Two locations is geographical locations. So when you go to Xcopy, you want to back up server A to server B somewhere else. At least they suggest, many people suggest at least 10 miles away because most tornadoes are not 10 miles in width. That's kind of the reason why that is. But if you have an earthquake or some other kind of a tsunami in one town, you know, like how the hurricanes in New York City, how much it took out, how the subways was filled with water, how everything was filled. So if you have two buildings in the same on the same street, it may not be the best idea. So figure 10 miles apart, and the further the better. Now, if you don't have two different areas or two different buildings in your company, which many of you might not, a lot of my clients don't, you can take and ask another client you may have or ask another friend that's in another company that you know and say, look, Joe, I was thinking, you know, we need a good backup strategy plan, and I like to do an X copy of my server. And I want to send it to your company because you are, you know, 20 miles away. And Jack said that's a good idea. So I like to put my information on your server. And would you mind me doing that? And Joe's going to go, okay, Frank, would you mind if I put if we put our stuff on your site? And you're like, hey, that's great. That's a wash. It's not going to cost you anything. I would suggest if you do that, though, buy your own server. Okay, don't, like, if somebody comes to me and I say, well, okay, somebody in the same facet of, you know, what we do and what they do is the same business. If I got two doctor's offices and I want to replicate data back and forth between those two doctor's offices, or X copy, not replicate. Now, I would tell Dr. A that we're going to put, that Dr. B is buying the server to put in his rack, and Dr. A buys the server and puts it in Dr. B's rack. The reason we do that is because I don't want to be worried about Dr. A running out of space, or Dr. A taking up all of Dr. B's server space. That's not going to be a good thing, because they're going to start deleting your backups, and it's not going to be pretty. So that is one way to do it. If your doctor, if your client, if your friend, I say doctor because I do a lot of medical stuff, if they don't have someone to back up to, they don't have a friend, you don't have a friend, right, that owns a server rack somewhere, you could, this is the one I don't suggest, but you could, and I have some colleagues that do this. If you have a big enough, if you have Fios at your house or cable at your house, put the server at your house. Tell that doctor, look, we're going to replicate to my house, okay? And you will charge them a replication fee. You can do that. I know you're saying, Jack, why don't we just go with one of these services? You know, all these different backup services online. You could pay them and just back up to them. And that is another way you can do it. But we're talking different than what we talked about before, because we talked about backup services before. And this show tonight's going to be a little bit different. We're going to say this is the cheaper way to do it, all right? If I was you, this is what I did. I went to 1&1. You go to Rackspace. You can go to GoDaddy. Whatever company out there, there's a million companies out there selling server space. Even Amazon sells server space or hard drive space. Storage, cloud storage space. You can pay one of these companies, and you can put it in your name, and you can replicate there, because they have a lot more data protection than what you're going to have at your house. Remember I said, and don't send a bunch of emails to say, Jack, you're crazy. Don't do it at your house. That's the lowest possible suggestion. That's one of those, man, this doctor, you know, he's a doctor, and he only makes, you know, $200 a month doing whatever he doctors. And he can't afford much, so he's going to pay you, you know, $10 a month to keep it at your house. Folks, these are better suggestions than saying, hey, doc, don't forget to grab that tape at night and take it home for your backup. That's not a good suggestion. It's not going to happen. Here's another one that somebody did. Hey, doc, you know, plug that external hard drive in, back up all your files. You know, they're under program files or under my documents, and grab all those and put them on a hard drive every night and take that home. Not going to happen. Doctors are busy people. That's what I work with. That's my clients. But if you're working for a pet store, if you're working for drug stores, these people have jobs. They're paying you to manage their data stores, and that's our job. That's what we do. So those are a couple suggestions you can do. So I would suggest the second one more than the first one. With that said, now we're going to talk just a little bit about backup compared to disaster recovery, because too many people out there get these two confused. Here's what they say. Well, Jack, I have a good backup, so my disaster recovery plan is A1. Wrong. That's not a disaster recovery plan. A backup is a backup. A disaster recovery plan is a disaster recovery plan. Now, I'm going to tell you, this is a story. I told you some of these are from the trenches, and we like to say that whenever we talk about my own experiences. Some years ago, I went to a sales meeting where a company was trying to sell us disaster recovery. This is when a company will build a server based off of your images, okay? And when they build the server, they take either the whole entire server, like say you have a Dell PowerEdge, whatever the newest ones are. I'm going to say 1850. That's just what I keep in my basement running. You have a Dell PowerEdge 1850. They will find a Dell PowerEdge 1850, build it to the exact specs of your server, and they will pull images at different times from your server. And if you have a disaster, you get flooded, your building catches on fire and burns down to the ground, a tornado comes, wipes out your whole town. And I often tell the people I work for, it's not the servers that we're concerned about. It's not the hardware. It's not the networking connections we're worried about. We worry pure and simply about the data, because the data is what you need to recover. So you now you have a backup, and you also have a server ready to throw that backup back in there and fire that server back up, and you're ready to get back on the road and get your people working. This is huge, right? So as I said, if something happens to your business, they will do one of two things, these disaster recovery places. One, they can bring out the server that they have in your in their storage facility. It says, Jim Bob's Computer Company. They can bring that out. They can plug it in, and they'll put the most current image they have of your server on there. They'll boot it up, and your network's back up and running. Your people can log in. What this company was trying to sell us, and I worked for a nonprofit at the time, so it was way overbearing. But what they tried to sell us was what they called the tractor trailer office. This thing was immaculate. It was gorgeous. They took a tractor trailer truck, and what they did with this tractor trailer truck was they went in the back, they put drywall in, they put all the networking cables behind the drywall, they put a small little in the front corner of the trailer. They put a small little room in there, and that little room actually housed the servers, whatever your server. They would put the servers in there for the company that needed their services. But in the back of this truck, they had like cubicles set up. There was, I believe, 8 workstations. So if they come out and your payroll people got to get payroll out, but your building burnt down last night, they can still get payroll out because everything's ready to go. They can go in there and hit that. They have printers in there. And all they do basically is come out, they power it up with some generators, and you're good to go. You're back up and operational. So that is a really, really great disaster recovery plan. Now, does it cost money? When I got to the cost, I started talking to these people, and I said, wait, how much is it? I mean, if it's pretty inexpensive, if I could even justify it to my bosses, I would sell it to them. I would say, look, this is a cool idea. We need to do it just in case, right? I mean, you don't buy smoke alarms for your house because you're going to have a fire. We buy smoke alarms for our house that they will notify us. Hopefully we never have a fire. We change the batteries and religiously, and we make sure they work. We test them because we don't want it to happen, but it's insurance, right? And when you sell this stuff to your company, you tell them this is insurance. Most companies feel that we have insurance. If the server rack burns down, everything blows up. Guess what? The insurance company will replace it. Absolutely, they will. You'll pay your deductible. They'll buy you all new servers. That's wonderful. But what did I just tell you 10 minutes ago? It's the data we worry about. I don't care if the whole server room burns down. I want to control and have the data that I can pull back. And we talked, if you want to go back a couple episodes ago and look, it might have been more than that, might have been a couple months ago, but look for the episode on backups. And I talk different ways of backing up, and I tell you how we back up. So I'm not going to really bring that up tonight in this particular show, because now we're talking more about disaster recovery. Now there is, well, as I said, these companies, they're in it for the money. They're not in it because they feel that they have this great need. Like, they're not even like the Red Cross goes out to helps a family. We see it on the news every day. And I think, folks, if you're going to donate to anybody in your lifetime, man, donate to the Red Cross. You know, they do some wonderful, wonderful things. Actually, if you picked my two charitable places, it would be the Red Cross and Make-A-Wish Foundation. Because I think those two people do the organizations do the most for individual people. I think it's wonderful. But these people aren't the Red Cross. They're not saying, hey, we'll come out. We feel really bad. Your building burnt down. Here's your servers, and here's the disaster thing. Let me start the generators, get you guys back working. No. They're in it for the money. That's what they're there for. It's a business for them. So the price is very, very steep. And now I want to talk to you about the downside of this service. Okay, what's the bad side, Jack? If there's so much good, there's got to be a reason I didn't buy it. Here's some of the reasons. The images are only as recent as what they pulled from your working environment. And I don't remember, you can look around for these companies, they are out there. I'm not sure 100% if these companies pull it every night at midnight. I know they don't do it as you, it's not an increment thing as you make changes. It's definitely not all day long. It would be too disruptive to your network. So I'm not sure how that works, but you can check those companies out. So that is the big downside. That's why I said, well, maybe not. How can I build a disaster recovery plan? If I was sitting down with a piece of paper, my boss came to me and said, Jack, we want to know your disaster recovery plan. What's going to happen if you come to work one day and the server room's on fire? I just make the joke. I say, well, I would get back in my truck. I would start it up and I would just go back home, turn my phone off, and go back to bed. We as network professionals are not allowed to do that, right? That's not what we do. So it's our job to protect the data. It's our job to be very careful with what we do, and you're going to make mistakes. You may not have the most current backup, but you're going to have a backup, something that you can use. If our server rooms are burned up and on fire, you know, I know you guys. First thing I would do is I would just immediately go log on to my backup servers that I use. Cloud backup storage is what I use, but I would log on and make sure that I have the data in there, right? That's what I want. After that, I'd say burn, baby, burn. Let it go and get all new servers later. So is there a better solution? Is there another solution out there other than these companies doing disaster recovery? Maybe not. But I'm going to tell you a more inexpensive way to do it. The best idea that we found for our company is do daily backups of your images. Now, if you're not virtualizing your servers, then bless you. I don't know why you're still in this business. And if you have a reason, email me and say, Jack, this is why I don't virtualize. We went to a virtualization, I don't know if it was a conference or a get-together one time, I guess, a company trying to sell us things. Actually, it was Oracle. And there was a gentleman sitting there, and he said, well, I don't virtualize because I don't want to put all my eggs in one basket. Remember, we talked about that last week, putting all your eggs in one basket. He said, if that server goes down, all the servers go with it. Well, buddy, look, if you have virtualization software, and if you're backing up your images, it really doesn't matter if the box goes down. Just move the image to a new box. And if you pay for the full entire vSphere, I guess they're calling it now, somebody corrected me because I called it ESX because I'm old schooled. And you know I still teach ESXi, which is still out there. The vSphere is the client that runs it that goes on the desktop. But anyway, he said, nope. I have 14 servers in my rack, and all 14 servers are running a copy of, you know, whatever it was at the time, Windows 2003 and Windows 2008, and they're just humming along. If server A craps out, that's okay. I have 13 other servers, or whatever the number is. I can just rebuild that server, reload the software, and put my data back on it, and I'm back up and running. He does have a good point. Here's the bad point. Backing up all of those physical boxes is going to be a pain in the backside. It's just a pain. I've done it. It's not fun to do. What I'm telling you to do is if you're virtualizing, I hope you are, you're backing up the images. Now, sometimes those images can get very, very large. We backed up one day, and we were pulling the backup locally because we wanted to move it to a different box, and we needed the image. Well, just to pull it off the server, it was going to take almost 20 hours. It was gigantic, and, you know, it's funny because when you put it back on a new box, it took about 2 hours to go back. And if you have one of these boxes acting as a file server, it could be huge. It really could. So it's something you got to think about. So the downside of these things, just talking about how big that one was, is that they take up a ton of space. Folks, I mean, have a nice 5 or 6, you know, maybe even a 10 terabyte NAS unit. Have that set up and have all your images going to that thing and do it every night. What I would suggest, set to backup software, whatever software you're using to pull your images. I guarantee there's a switch in there somewhere, a way that you can change it and make it incremental backup. So that's just a really easy way of doing things. I'm going to go over with you now. Now that I have your brains kind of spinning and we have your brains moving on, we want to start talking about just a little bit of terminology about backup. And just a couple ideas I found for you and ways of thinking about backup. Let me find a page here I used. Okay, so we know the concept of backup is the copying of data and log records from one place to another for storage or for recovery. Now, here's a couple here for SQL, a way you can backup SQL. One is called the recovery model. The recovery model is a database property that controls the transaction log maintenance on the database. Three recovery models exist: simple, full, and bulk logged. The recovery model of the database determines its backup and restore requirements. I normally backup my databases in full. Sometimes, again, you may be backing up in incremental backups. So there's a couple of different ways you can do this. Restore, a multi-phase process that copies all the data in log pages from a specified SQL Server backup to a specified database, and then rolls forward all the transactions that are logged in the backup by applying log changes to bring the data forward in time. Now, naturally, these two are talking about database backup, and that's kind of where I wanted to talk tonight was more the SQL stuff because we don't hit it a lot in this show. And I know if you know, we all have our specialties, right? I think my strong point is servers and networks. That's my strong suit. That's what I really, really enjoy doing. We have a lot of SQL servers running. So I had to learn as much as I could about the SQL servers. And, you know, I've written code with SQL, with Microsoft backend databases and MySQL, which is the open source database. And if I picked one to write, I like writing MySQL better. They're both about the same, right? They all use this SQL language, so they're all basically the same. With some limitations, I guess, either one. But anyway, I had to school myself on how to back these things up because I have to protect the workers' data. And they're going to come to you and say, look, Joe, we have this nice program we're going to put on here. It's called Quicken Loan Services. There's a SQL database. I don't know what that is. But you're going to need to put that on the server, and then we're going to load this software on there, and that's going to be our back-end data engine. That's what the salesman told us. They don't know what a data engine is from a Ford engine, okay? And you may not either, and that's okay, because what's the big talk about we've had tonight so far, folks, is you need to just pick it up. Don't ever, especially if you listen to this show, don't ever tell your boss, hey, CEO Frank, well, I'd like to really do that, but I don't know a damn thing about, you know, that SQL service. No. Bad answer. I would never tell my boss, I don't know. I will tell you that I will do my very best, and I will set out, I will learn what I need to learn, and I will put it to use, okay? If you have to find some online classes, folks, there's some great online classes out there. I mean, a lot of you have taken my server courses. I teach server because sometimes we need a specified type of learning. You don't need to go back to school for 2 years to learn how to set up a MySQL server and a Moodle database. You just don't need to do that. You need to find something online, find some videos, find somebody teaching the course, and you will learn it very, very rapidly. Or do like I did programming, right? Blood, sweat, and tears. And I learned how to program just by doing it. And now I can pick up any language and write. I mean, that's just the way I do things. So a lot of people say, once you learn one language, you can pretty much type another. And that's kind of true, except for C# and what's that other language? Xcode. Xcode is a form of C# or C, and it's pretty difficult. All right. Let's just talk about a couple more about these few more things here, and then we're going to back out for the evening. But we are talking about some stuff here. Types of backups is copy-only backup. This is a special use backup that is independent of the regular sequence of SQL Server backups. The data backup, a backup of data in a complete database. the database backup, a partial database, which is a partial backup, and a set of data files or file group, or as a file backup. And then it just breaks the stuff down. And you know what? I'm not going to read all these to you because I feel people that listen to the show, I feel you guys and girls out there are very intelligent. You can read this. That's why I hate PowerPoint. Don't you hate PowerPoint when your boss comes in and says, we're going to watch this PowerPoint presentation? He puts it up. These are the words. Today, we're going to talk about the percentage of growth in our company. And he's reading it. Today, we're going to talk about the percentage of growth in our company. Next line. The percent of the growth of the company has fallen 10%. And he's reading these. Folks, you're intelligent. You can read yourself. Send the PowerPoint to me. I will read it. I don't need to sit in a meeting and watch you present it. Right? Same here. I'm not going to read all these to you. You're very intelligent people. I do recommend that you follow this link. I will have this link on the show notes tonight. It will be the second link. The first one will be the tool from tonight. Read this stuff over and get an idea about SQL Server backups. Get more acquainted with it. Because if you don't have an SQL Server running in your network, you will at one time or another, probably. Unless you're fortunate, if you're working in a business and all they do is documents and spreadsheets, then I guess you're okay. So anyway, folks, I hope you picked a little bit tonight up about some different stuff that we wanted to talk about there, about backups, about inexpensive ways to back up your servers. Nice, inexpensive ideas for you. Remember, though, if you want to, the best way to do your backup, if you're doing an inexpensive backup, is to buy something like a Rackspace or 1&1 or any one of those companies out there. I've never heard anything bad about people losing data, so I think it's pretty safe to say that you can back up. I wouldn't back up to places like Dropbox, iCloud, any of the stuff that's written for the main user, the mainstream. You know what I mean? Look for commercial grade stuff. You're gonna be a lot happier. The stuff that's written just for backing up your pictures to iCloud and I like Dropbox. I don't have a problem with Dropbox. I use it a lot. I mean, Dropbox is a great service, but it's not really a place to back up your stuff to. And what's the other one now? The new one I just started playing with from Microsoft is the Microsoft Cloud or whatever they call that one. I mean, there's so many names and they all do the same thing, really. They sync our files across different places. If I had to pick one for companies, and I'll tell you one more thing. One more piece of software that would work for you, and I didn't even bring it up tonight, is a software called BitSync. It's written kind of by the BitTorrent people, the people that's known for downloading illegal software or music or whatever. But they wrote a piece of software called BitSync. And what BitSync allows you to do is you put it on the server of your client, and you put the other one on another server across the internet. It works anywhere. You don't have to worry about firewalls or ports or holes or anything. And on the other side, you put BitSync, and you sync them together. And what's nice about BitSync is you can even put BitSync on an iPad or an Android phone, and it doesn't matter if it's Mac or Windows, or you can sync this stuff anywhere you want. It's a really, really cool piece of software. I use it, and I've been playing with it, and I really give it a big thumbs up. You put the folders that you want to sync in BitSync, and it will just sync it right over to another computer over the cloud, but it doesn't store it anywhere on anybody's cloud because it goes from their computer to your computer or another server like we were talking about. So that is another, and I didn't even think about that tonight, but it's a great, great way to do things. It's called BitSync, and it's free. Another free tool for you there tonight. I think it actually was in the show notes at one point. I don't really remember. I'll have to go back and look. Folks, a lot of you have been helping me out there week in, week out, by using my Amazon link, and I really, really appreciate it. I know every podcaster in the world is saying, use my Amazon link, use mine, click my Amazon link. It's better. I don't know how they're better than anybody else's. The truth is, you click on that link, you pay the same price for whatever you're buying, and Amazon says, hey, Tips from the Serve Room sent Fred down here to buy his new Raspberry Pi computer kit. Well, they give me a couple dollars or a small percentage back off of your purchase. So you're helping the show out. You don't have to spend any money to do so. So that's the Amazon link. You do have to deactivate your ad blocker, though. Deactivate the ad blocker. I know we all love them because there's so much ads on all these web pages, right? It's terrible. You'll find on Tips in the Server Room, there's just a couple things on there, and I don't blast you with ads. So don't worry about that, or spyware stuff. That's just ridiculous. I fight it every day. I'm not going to promote it to you folks, right? I'm not going to do that. So take your ad blocker off and use that Amazon link. And folks, if you don't want to wait until January of 2015 for the live class, and you say, Jack, I just can't really afford, or I just can't really, I don't really feel that I can justify paying the price for the live class, that's okay, because the pre-recorded classes are up online. I teach Windows Server 2008 R2, Windows Server 2012 R2, and VMware ESXi Server from install to administration through an easy-to-follow videos. And if you're one of the people that email me again and say, Jack, I can find all these videos on YouTube. You can. Absolutely. Not my videos, but you will find people telling you how to do these different subjects on YouTube. The only problem with YouTube is it's not organized. It's not a class. You look and you say, I want no DNS. And you'll probably find my video. That video on YouTube has done extremely, astronomically well. I can't ask for how many great number of views I got on that video. But you might say something like, Jack, I want to know how to hook up two Linux computers, whatever. Okay, look for that on YouTube. But if you want to be organized and learn this stuff, folks, take my online course. You're going to be very happy you did. Go to tipsfromtheserveroom.com. Look at the online class link at the top of the page. Click on that, and you'll go in and sign up for one of those courses. They're very inexpensive, and they're so inexpensive right now, I just marked them down. So if you've been looking, saying, I don't know if I can afford, and I think it was originally $300, you say, I just can't afford that right now. Christmas is coming. How do I buy presents and learn? And I marked them down, folks, to $250. So I took $50 off the courses. You can sign up right now. Take that special offer. It's not going to last for long. So take that offer and get in there and go now. Many, many people have taken that course. Many people have paid the actual full price of the course, and they're very, very happy they did. They've been reporting back saying, Jack, I think this actually got me the job I was looking for, because they take the certificate with them and they present that they just took a fresh server course and it's fresh in their brain. Or like I say, if you're that accidental tech in the office, have your employer. The employers have been paying for this course. They'll pay for it. You take it. When you get your certificate, you know, even if they want you to pay for it in advance, I've done that. I paid in advance. You show them the certificate when you pass a course, and then, you know, they'll reimburse you the money. So it's just a wonderful way to learn. Anyway, once again, you can check it out at tipsfromtheserveroom.com. I'm not going to beat a horse there. It's there. It's available for you. Please sign up and take that special offer today. It won't last long. Folks, I hope you have a great work week, if there is such a thing in life. But you know what? If you're working on computers and you love this field like I do, and you enjoy working on computers and you just can't get enough of it. I mean, folks, if I'm not writing these shows, now I'm back to writing software. My wife said, will you ever get out of that computer chair? I think I'm glued here, but I do. I told her I will. There's two reasons you get out of your chair. Go to the bathroom and get another beer, right? So right now, I think that's what you should do. Go grab a beer, kick back, relax, and enjoy the rest of your evening. Hope you have a great work week. I'll see you back here next Tuesday on Tips from the Server Room. Good night, my friends. I'll see you then. You just listened to Tips from the Server Room with your host, Jack. If you have any questions, please drop me a comment at tipsfromtheserveroom.com. Thanks again for tuning in and downloading the shows. Now sit back, relax, and listen to the remainder of the music. We'll see you next week on Tips from the Server Room. So long.